Hey, this is Scott Snyder, and you're listening to Shed Talk.
Hold your breath! Hold your breath! Sons of Gondor! Of Rohan! My brothers!
I see in your eyes the same fear that would take the heart of me.
A day may come when the courage of men fails, when we forsake our friends and break all bonds of fellowship.
But it is not this day.
An hour of wolves and shattered shields when the age of men comes crashing down. But it is not this day. This day we fight.
By all that you hold dear on this good earth, I bid you stand, men of the West!
Join us and have a drink with Camacho on Shed Talk, Episode 8.
Add your kids. Add your wife. And add your husband because they raping everybody out here.
Coming straight at you from the heart of the California Redwoods, it's Shed Time.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Winning. My jokes are bad.
Welcome to the Shed. I'm Andrew Newman, sitting in the Shed once again with Steve Turbovich. Steve, how are you tonight?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you. Brian, Mr. Camacho, how are you?
I'm pumped. I'm ready to go. Let's do this.
Oh, you better be. And Kyle. Kyle, how are you?
Yeah, I'm pumped. I'm ready to go. Let's do this.
All right. We got a fight underway here in the Shed. So, yeah, we've been having, San Diego Comic-Con's been going on this past week. There's things coming up soon. We got to see this new trailer for The Hobbit Battle of the Five Armies. Is there any new video game news, Camacho?
So the beta for Destiny came out for those who pre-ordered the game Destiny. Yeah, are you familiar with Destiny?
I've seen it on my dashboard, but I haven't played it or anything. Tell me about it.
Basically, Bungie, the creators of the Halo installments, they made a game called Destiny. It's action, I guess, somewhat of RPG. I did talk to a friend of mine, and he said because he got to download the beta, and he said basically it's Halo meets Call of Duty meets Mass Effect meets a couple other games. he said not only is it action, you know, kind of like first person slash action, but it's open world. He said multiplayer is really well done, very well balanced. Of course, I didn't order it because I'm not, I'm not going to, with the beta, I know what to expect from it. I'm excited to play it, but at the same time, I'm not jumping to play it because I'm getting an Xbox One the first week or the first beginning of October. So by then, Destiny will be out already because I believe Destiny's coming out somewhere in the middle, the end of September of this year. So it's gearing everybody up to, get hyped and kind of put in their orders and, look forward to Destiny. So that's some of the video game news coming out. That's
I'm personally looking forward to a game that's part Super Mario, part Metal Gear, part Skyrim,
right.
You can't forget Zelda, a little bit of Metroid, I guess, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
You say, okay, Halo is a first-person shooter, and so is Call of Duty. So a cross between the two of them, are they radically different games?
Gameplay-wise? I mean, I know one's sci-fi and one isn't, but...
The basic format is the same. You get your right trigger, trigger to shoot, I'm sure to, click your left joystick to kneel or duck or whatever, or crouch.
So they're both first-person shooters. I think when I see the previews for this Destiny game, it makes me kind of think about, it looks kind of like Call of Duty tactically, a little bit more like Call of Duty in terms of how everybody moves and how everybody shoots and how the weapons are designed. seems more team-based, and it seems more kind of like Halo. Well, Halo Reach was a little bit, you know, more team-based, but the style to it, I think the comparisons with Halo is when it comes to the art style.
Okay.
And how everything's stylized. Yeah. But yeah, so San Diego Comic-Con, they brought us a lot of, you know, little tidbits. Those new pictures of the Batman movie were pretty interesting.
Yeah, he's in a suit that's modeled off of, if not identical to, Frank Miller's the suit that Frank Miller draws him in at the end of Dark Knight Returns when he fights Superman, the big ass, the thick metal suit. Yeah, yeah, the mech suit. Yeah, so that's what we have to look forward to.
Yeah, it looked nice. Zack Snyder certainly knows how to make things look good. He knows how to make them look right. I'm interested to see where the story is going to go, but so far I've really liked what I've seen. I like that new profile shot of Batman. I'm starting to think that Ben Affleck, his chin really looked the part.
He's, yeah.
Do you remember when they announced Batman versus Superman or whatever, and we were just totally against? We're like, this is going to be, you know, like, yeah. We were just like, no, this ain't happening. We're not into it. You know, and because of that picture that Turd Burglar tweeted us, I got a little bit more, like, the first time excited for this movie. Just a tad, there was like a bit of sunshine coming through the clouds a little bit, I have to say.
Right. As long as he spends most of the movie wearing the cowl, then I don't care who's underneath, you know? I mean, as long as he looks the part, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I hope they modulate his voice somehow to make it. I don't know if he's going to try to pull off a Batman voice or not. I can't.
The fact of the matter is, Christian Bale, no matter how you slice it, is going to be a tough act to follow.
Well, you know, I have to say the best voiceover for Batman, of course, he's, you know, I don't know what acting ability that he has, but it's the voice for Batman in the animated series, Kevin Conroy. That, I have to say, is the best Batman voice I've ever in. It is from an animated series, but at the same time, nothing will beat, you know, Kevin Conroy. When I read a Batman comic, I don't think of, oh, you know, where is he? No, I think of, like, Kevin Conroy, you know, doing Batman. When I read a Superman comic, I think of Tim Daly's voice, you know. And, you know, when those two die, that's going to be, like, the saddest, like, day. That's the day when Superman and Batman really dies.
I still think of I still have Adam West's voice in my head. Anytime I'm reading Batman, the calm, methodical, and analytical delivery of Adam West, whether he's fighting or using the bat handkerchief, Adam West will always be etched in my memory. I think that the only reason I watch Family Guy is because I was such a fan of the Batman TV series.
Yeah, right.
Macho, what are you doing over there? Are you making another drink?
Yes.
So, all right. I'm going to take us back here to the best Comic-Con ever. Comic-Con 2013. And Andrew's laughing because he was there. Andrew and I drove 12 hours to San Diego in his Toyota Tacoma with a camper shell. And to go get these free passes to Comic-Con that were being given. So we get there. And Andrew's brother is not responding to our texts. So we're in this radio silence. We don't know what the hell's going on. We're checking out the gas lamp. We're like, oh, text us the morning of the day we're supposed to go. Says, oh, sorry, I didn't get the tickets. So we're 12 hours away from home. We spent all this money. We've got like 5 pounds of trail mix and salami that we've been subsisting off of because we're broke. And we're like, well, fuck it. Let's just go to Comic-Con anyway. We go to Comic-Con. And, you know, we're outside, you know, feeling like the kid who couldn't get a date to prom. But what made it all worth it, besides the live-action Lord of the Rings Lego set with a 4-foot-tall Gandalf made entirely from Legos, was we go out back, and, we're just walking around shooting the shit, complaining about Andrew's brother. I look up. I see this guy. And I'm looking at him, and I'm like, I know this guy. I totally know this guy. And he's looking at me. He lowers his sunglasses, and he says, hey, how's it going? And I'm like, oh, hey. And I'm struggling to remember his name because I'm like, who the hell is this? And then some fat guy over to the left says, Footloose, because it's Kevin Bacon that we're seeing. And Kevin Bacon stopped. I didn't even know who the fuck he was, which is hilarious. But I'm looking at him, and I'm like, you know what? For a guy who's 50-something, Kevin Bacon is in terrific shape. The guy looks good. His hair was immaculate. So I called my best friend Josh to be like, dude, we just saw Kevin Bacon, and you wouldn't believe this, but the guy's 54, and he looks awesome. And Josh goes, Kevin Bacon ain't, well, that's just because he uses, you know, he's got creams, a personal trainer. I'd look that good if I was 55. It's like, and I'm like, you're jealous of Kevin Bacon. Wow. And who wouldn't be jealous of Kevin Bacon? The man looks fantastic.
Yeah, we were just walking right there, right where the boats dock, right behind the convention center, and it was like this old ship that was stylized to look like for Assassin's Creed 4, Black Flag. Oh, Ubisoft had rented it. Like, oh yeah, had rented it out. And he comes walking out from the back of the ship.
By the way, you guys should play that game.
He came walking out from the back of the ship.
That's awesome.
And there was a fat guy dressed like Chewbacca who said,
right.
there was a fat guy dressed like Chewbacca who says, Kevin Bacon, I loved you in Footloose.
A few good men. Not in Tremors.
Not in JFK or Stir of Echoes.
Yeah.
Hollow Man, his best but film, in arguably.
Footloose.
You know, Hollow Man is a... Okay. All right. Sorry. We won't.
His best movie because he wasn't in half of it.
Yeah, Hollow Man. I'm sorry. Hollow Man.
Yeah. Yeah, Hollow... Wasn't that... Wait, was that Christian Slater or Kevin Bacon?
That was Kevin. You don't want it to be Kevin Bacon. You're like, please make this Christian Slater. He's invisible. Is it going to be Kevin... Fuck, it's Kevin Bacon.
You know, the only thing that I... You know, not to get off track, but the thing that I don't like about Christian Slater and, like, some of his early films...
Wait, are we talking about Kevin Bacon or Christian Slater?
No, I'm talking about Christian Slater. One of the things that irritate me... He's kind of like, you know, like for example, like Broken Arrow, True Romance, you know, he's like...
That was on the top of the list.
I don't know. It's like he didn't have his own identity for an acting ability, so he like totally like took on like the Jack Nicholson kind of persona.
I thought he took on the Kevin Bacon persona personally.
He combined Kevin Bacon and Jack Nicholson and wasn't as good as either. Although I got to say, Pump Up the Volume, that's a good one.
Because he always talks like this, you know, or you know what he's doing.
I see the Nicholson in him. I think everyone does. Everyone thought in the beginning that he was just doing an impression of Jack, but I don't see the Kevin Bacon in him.
No, horniness done of Jack Nicholson because he can't, you know, like I said, come up with his
You should be able to see the Kevin Bacon in all of us.
Bacon is a part of all of us, and we are all a part of him.
And we'll leave it at that. Lord of the Rings. The new Hobbit trailer came out. And impressions. What are our first impressions of the trailer? Steve?
I don't know. I wasn't pissed off that I saw too many good scenes. You know what I mean? Like, they gave it all away in the beginning. Although it was just a teaser, so the next one will probably show a lot more. But it was good. I don't know. I didn't walk away thinking anything, really. Or I don't know. It was good, right?
Okay.
I was kind of cool. Like, there was this one scene where, like, it looked like this wagon or this, you know, lost its wheel and was chased by these wolf hounds or something like that. And I think that...
Wargs.
I don't even know that. I think that's going to be an action sequence, kind of like what in the Desolation of Smog when they had the river.
Yeah. Okay.
The barrels. Now, a lot, you know, I have to say, I know that was a very long scene, and a lot of people would argue, hey, that could have been edited a little shorter. But, you know, that was actually one of, like, my favorite scenes in that movie, and I liked it so much that it could have been 5 minutes longer.
Yeah, it was definitely made for the 3D.
Looking at the at this new trailer here, I think it's going to be a good closure, a good final epic, you know, kind of finale to tie up the Hobbit. Kind of like, it almost reminded me of like watching the trailer from The Return of the King.
Okay.
You know, where you see, you know, people preparing for the war, which, you know, obviously is because it's the title, you know, what, Battle of the Five Armies. So I think that it's just going to be really, I'm not expecting it to be over the top epic, but like really cool epic, you know, where it's just like, wow, it can't get any better than this kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, the trailer was very well done. It didn't give you too much, and the music kind of gave you like a microcosm or like an overview of how the movie is going to flow. It's very like tense, and like they have like the woman, the Enya style woman singing by herself, and then near the end it gets back into like, oh, everything's going to be all right in the end, though. Anyone that's read The Hobbit knows what happens anyway. But so I'm not like spoiling The Hobbit, obviously. No, but
I was not like prepared to see the lake town,
okay,
you know, being set on, which, you know, obviously that's what happened at the end anyway when Smaug flies towards it. But they actually showed it on fire. They showed the smoldering smoke in the background, you know, obviously it's a scene after the fact that it happened. I was really surprised that they showed that in the trailer. Okay. Unless it's something else on fire and they're just trying to divert our attention to something else, make it think it's something else. But I tend to believe it's Lake Town already, you know.
Oh, yeah, Lake Town gets burned up.
Other than that, I kind of like the teaser trailer. I wouldn't even call it a teaser trailer because they showed a lot, actually.
Yeah, but you don't feel like they showed you anything that's going to... Yeah, they didn't blow their load early or anything here. No. Exactly. Kyle, what did you think about it? You are our Lord of the Rings aficionado.
Thanks. I thought the first Hobbit movie was great, and unlike a lot of other huge Tolkien dorks, I did not object to... People said, oh, there's stuff in there that's not in the books. However, all the material that they added was from the appendices. So there really wasn't a whole lot that Tolkien didn't write that appeared in the first Hobbit. The second Hobbit, there was stuff in there that was totally... not, you know, the fight with the dwarves, between the dwarves and the dragon, because they needed to have a confrontation at the end of this film, was not only drawn from outside of the Tolkien source material, but it diminishes the climax of the confrontation with Smaug at the end of the book, because now there's a mini confrontation where the dwarves are sort of triumphant. They pour molten metal on him and piss him off, and to me, that undermines the whole point that Smaug is supposed to illustrate, which is that he is the consequences via nature of the greed and the ambition of the dwarves. You know, Smaug represents what is wrong with their their selfish behavior. So to have that confrontation kind of watered down that theme. What I see in the teaser trailer for the third film. I'm very hopeful. It looks like they are trying to stay true to the source material. It looks like they really want to play up this confrontation and stay true to the themes expressed in the book. I think when you try to add, the dwarves don't need to win over Smaug at the end of the second movie. You know, that is a part in the story where all is lost. You know, like they're screwed. The dragon is burning down the city and he's purely invincible. By having the dwarves, you know, piss him off and pour metal on him and do their thing with the mining equipment at the end of the second movie, I think you defeat the themes of the book, and then also it puts a chink in the armor of this invincible dragon that you're not supposed to see until he's actually dead. So I'm looking for them to clean that up. I'm hoping that this third movie is a redemption.
Story arc wise, you want your protagonists to be at rock bottom by the end of your second act, which was the end of the second movie. So that minor victory, I agree with you, it takes away from the overall arc. If they had suffered a minor loss there and been disparaged, that would have been more appropriate.
You would have had something like, one of the reasons The Empire Strikes Back was so successful was at the end of the movie, yeah, you can't exactly believe, wait a minute, Luke gets his ass kicked and his hand chopped off,
right,
and that's the end? And does he get up and win? No, he runs away crying like a baby. That's powerful. And like, you can't wait to see what happens in the third film. If they'd have just let the dwarves get pissed on by the dragon and he goes to destroy the town, I think it would have been a stronger send-off.
I think I might agree with you on that. I've talked to you about that whole sequence before, and it's well done and within itself, and it's exciting, and you know, on the big screen especially, and the whole it looks really cool when he gets all the gold poured on him. Yeah, you're right. They should have ended it more of a cliffhanger. Not that there's not a cliffhanger, because he's obviously ready to go destroy Lake Town, but and he's pissed off, and they didn't really hurt him in the end, but. Yeah, they give you kind of like the dwarves had they shouldn't have given them that little triumph, you know, or they tricked Smaug, or they got him good that time, you know.
Right, exactly.
The only other disagreement I had with The Hobbit was that they heavily affected Benedict Cumberbatch, if I'm saying that correctly. They heavily affected his voice. They drowned it in special effects. A friend of mine jokes, he's like, this is just basically Treebeard, but a dragon instead, because, you know, it's the same effect they're putting on the voice. When I think of that, the cartoon, which is ridiculous, but let's say that the cool part of that cartoon is the voice actor who plays Smaug.
Yeah.
He's got an effective, resonant, you know, dark voice. And Smaug is, the awesomeness of Smaug is in that this worm, this fire-breathing dragon, is this intelligent being that is very calculated and very logical and very, you know, human. And to heavily layer a terrific actor like Benedict Cumberbatch to drench his voice in sound effects, I thought diminished from that a little bit.
Steve, do you have a favorite Lord of the Rings movie?
The First Hobbit. The First Hobbit is my favorite of the five. I like it better than any of the first three Lord of the Rings.
What makes you like The Hobbit better than any of the other movies?
I literally want to say the colors. Like the mise-en-scène, like the actual aesthetics of the movie appealed to me more. I think there was more of a... You guys remember Legend?
Yeah.
Legend fucking from the 80s.
Of course.
So, Legend...
The Tom Cruise classic.
For most...
Tim Curry.
Right, yeah, exactly. most of the wilderness scenes in the first three Lord of the Rings movies, it's very picturesque, it's beautiful, it's New Zealand, it's untouched, but it just looks like a forest. But even though Legend was all done on a soundstage, all of the foresty scenes in Legend, if you remember, shit glittered and stuff, and there were like pixies and fairies and stuff. It looked like an enchanted forest. None of it looked like they could have possibly been inside any real forest. So there was a fanciful element, I guess I want to say, to the Hobbit movie. I don't think I'm explaining.
It was a visually cohesive, beautiful film. And I think Guillermo del Toro, who was the first director, had a lot to do with a lot of the visual concepts. And you can tell because his signature style is on the orcs. Like, those orcs are all... did I say Benicio del Toro or Guillermo del Toro? Because not Benicio del Toro. Not the guy from Trial. Okay, thank good, because that would be heresy.
I didn't know del Toro had anything to do with The Hobbit.
He did. He was the first director. He pulled out because he got too busy. And New Line were dragging their feet. Peter Jackson took over the project, but he kept on del Toro as a visual consultant. So Guillermo del Toro was responsible for a lot of those fantastical visual elements that you saw.
Crazy. I mean, there was a different look to that movie.
Totally different. Yeah. And if you look at del Toro's other films like Pan's Labyrinth or Hellboy, you can really see his signature in there.
Yeah. I mean, Hellboy 1's entertaining, but Hellboy 2 is actually... pretty good movie.
Really? Okay.
Oh yeah, it's great. The designs and the concepts in it are very, very.
No
shit. Oh yeah, it's great.
Or gave it a chance.
Just check it out. Yeah, it's better than the first one. Yeah, it's a good sequel. Oh yeah, if you guys haven't seen that, you should.
I have not seen it. I really enjoyed the first one, but
I once saw I once saw Hellboy 2 in the theater. I'm an old school Hellboy fan actually.
Oh yeah.
When it first started coming out, when Mike Mignola first started putting them out, I loved it.
It's like Tom Waits meets Spawn. I mean, it's a great classic. That's like Del Toro's. You go from giant robots fighting Godzilla monsters to Pan's Labyrinth, which is a dark sort of archetypal exploration of the Spanish Civil War during fascism. And then you look at, like, The Orphanage, really good, dark, creepy horror films. He has such a range. He did Blade 2, which sucked, but it was very bold.
Blade 2?
Yeah. He
have his character.
He took vampires to a really different place.
And monsters were cool in Blade 2.
Not a good script, but I got to say that what he did with it visually was really interesting.
Blade 2. Why don't I remember it? What happens in Blade 2?
Vampires.
There's like mutant vampires.
That doesn't set it apart from 1 and 3.
I think it's just more the look and the design of the vampires.
Ryan Reynolds and Jessica Biel?
That was on the third one.
Oh, yeah. The third one I've never been able to finish.
That was about the time that Wesley Snipes was probably prosecuted for tax evasion.
Yeah, he didn't finish. He didn't finish the film. They got a stunt double to fill in for Wesley Snipes because he had been convicted for tax offense. Wait, I don't know, not really.
It sucks that he had to pay taxes.
How the fuck can they do that to Blade? He's supposed to be out there killing vampires, and they fucking look anyway.
I know. He should be like a. Is he an agent of the church? Aren't religious institutions tax exempt?
How does Blade make money? I mean, like, you know, Superman is a reporter. Right. Superheroes have this pretense of like they have a normal life. They pay the bills. They pay the rent. Who pays Blade to kill vampires? I mean, he's a vampire. I guess he doesn't need to eat. But what is it? Where does he get his clothes?
Well, he's half vampire. His father was a vampire.
His mother, I think,
is human.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
and
I think in the movie, wasn't his mother actually behind the whole thing? Correct.
She's in it as a. Wait, is this the first Blade?
Yeah. The first
by the way, the villain in the first Blade is underrated. That guy. whatever his name is. That guy's he's badass. He does a good.
He's the spokesperson for Blue cigarettes now, those electric cigarettes.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, yeah. Underrated.
Almost, he did well for himself. Needed a fucking trach. He almost ended up with a fucking.
I thought maybe he needed money. He's desperate for money. That's why he's doing the blue.
I thought it was his
cigarettes, but that's why. Okay, cool.
I thought it was his rampant vampirism, but no, it wasn't. It was the cigarettes.
Camacho, what's your favorite Lord of the Rings?
I like the Desolation of Smaug.
Really?
I liked it. I like
out of all the out of all five movies.
Second favorite is Return of the King because of that huge battle with the elephant.
Okay.
You know,
but okay, get back to this Desolation of Smaug though. I'm interested. This is your favorite.
Again, favorite part was the river scene when they were in the barrels. That was just like that's what really did it for me. That's what, you know, I was sitting back in my seat watching this 3D and I said to myself, wow, this, you know, if anything else, this is what made this movie was the barrel scene. And I know that probably was like a little bit in the book, if not maybe not even in it, but
it was in it. Yeah.
Okay. I just thought it was really well done just because of the creativity that they had of trying to, you know, fight off the orcs, and then they were fending off the orcs, and they kind of almost gotten a little bit of a bind, and sure enough, because of their, you know, the elves' agility and the luck of the dwarves, you know, they just kept afloat, and they did, you know, and I just thought it was really, really cool. Really far-fetched, obviously, because no one in hell would be able to, like, pull that off, but the whole concept was cool. The dragon, because they showed the dragon, because I know that when I watched The Hobbit, the only peek of the dragon that you had was when the pile of gold moved and you got to see its eye. Kind of, I was really anticipating that, and when they showed that, I was kind of like, wow, that's, I was at all with the dragon. I totally, you know, understand, you know, Kyle's point about, you know, when they were pouring, you know, they were trying to smolder it with, you know, or you know, pour the molten on it to stop it, whatever.
The gold,
yeah, that was cool. But just the fact that the, you know, they showed the dragon, they showed what it can do, they showed its meanness, its power, you know, its evilness behind, you know, its, you know, its persona, and the fact that I liked that they got more into how Gollum, Bilbo, thing that they had going in that cave, that was pretty cool, because when you look back at you know, at Frodo and Gollum, they put in pieces of that so that, you know, you kind of see where it began, and, you know, kind of like, you know, Gollum's kind of greediness, or how his mentality kind of fixated on that ring. And, you know, even though in the beginning of Return of the King, they showed Sméagol on the boat, I think he drowned the person that he was with to get the ring.
Flashback.
And that was cool, but the fact that they had that little thing going between Bilbo and Gollum in there, that was cool too, I thought. So,
well, in Fellowship, they have those brief scenes of Gollum getting tortured and him revealing who took the ring from him. You know, that's what that's the information that they got from Gollum.
Can you give me a little bit?
Well, because remember, he's like, Baggins.
Oh, you know, okay, that's what. Okay.
Yeah, Bilbo and Shire Baggins.
Gollum, you know, that scene in the original Hobbit, which is Tolkien's first major published work, the chapter that they spend on Gollum is in a lot of ways the most interesting part of the book, and the significance of it is kind of whimsical and lost. What he goes on to, the story he tells with Gollum throughout the Lord of the Rings, Gollum becomes less of this weird creep living in a cave as he's really Frodo's shadow side. He is what can happen. Like, this is the whole idea of, like, this is what happens when you pursue greed, when you forsake your morals. You know, he's a drug addict. You know, Andy Serkis really conjured a heroin addict, and I thought that was apt as a way of visually portraying what Gollum's going through. He's obsessed.
Yeah, no, that's exactly. But you already know, because you've already watched the first three films, but because it's a prequel, you know, this monster, you're just, or this thing, this monkey on your back kind of thing, you know, which... I guess that's what it is. He's just...
Last week you're talking about chasing dragons, and this week you're talking about monkeys on your back. Fucking Camacho. Personally, for me, my favorite Lord of the Rings movie, Two Towers. Two Towers actually stands out. Two Towers is one of my favorite movies, period. Mostly just the Battle of Helm's Deep. It's so compelling to me, the way that it was delivered. And it's very moving. that whole battle, just the... It all went down. It was so epic. Exactly. It was so epic. They had the... I mean, the part that's not even in the book when the elves show up and everything. It was very... It was cool. That was, like, one of the cool add-ons in the movie that really made sense, and it kind of, like, really kind of added to the story in a lot of ways. And so they're showing, like, this early connection between the elves and humans again. It all comes down to the part when Gandalf comes riding down the hill near the end. Yeah, I remember the first time I saw it in the theater. I have a little tears come in my eye. Like, oh, that was fucking awesome. There's Gandalf. That's right, because you start to think, oh fuck, they just got fucked up. You know, they're about to even if you know what's going to happen already. Right, I mean, right. Just seeing it's just very powerful, and you know you're watching a very good movie when.
I forget that.
When even when you know it's going to happen, every time you see it, it's still like very moving. I appreciated that from Two Towers.
I have to say, just recently, one of the cable channels was showing The Fellowship of the Rings. And in the movie, they were preparing for Bilbo's party, his birthday party. And it was really cool how a lot of the kids were gathering when he was telling the story of, like, when he was with those big trolls, I guess, that were, you know, and it was cool because when you saw the Unexpected Journey, they showed the scene. It was like, oh, wow. I remember because I watched. Right. Yeah. And then when who was it? Was it Mary and whoever?
Pippin.
Lit the fireworks. The dragon firework. Yeah. Like, there's a dragon. Like, oh, Bilbo says, I haven't seen a dragon since. It's like. That was cool, you know. Yeah. I liked how they, you know, was able to incorporate that. Of course, that was way back, like in 99 or 2000, whenever, you know, that movie came out. But because it was, you know, it's happening in the current films, which is the prequels. You know, it's kind of cool when I went back, because even there was a scene when Frodo, Gandalf was going through the Shire on his wagon, and Bilbo, you know, hops on there and he's talking to him. He says, "Hey, you know, just to let you know." Bilbo doesn't like unexpected visitors and it's just the little things that they showed, really, really cool. And it made me appreciate the Unexpected Journey a little bit more because of the little Easter eggs, if you will, or the little things that they had. I mean, of course they were going by the book, but, you know, in there and it just totally, it's tying in really, really well. I still am not really a big Lord of the Rings fan. Again, I'm really ashamed. But
I didn't think of Kyle's opinion here.
Okay.
Kyle.
This is a tough one. I think that Two Towers, cinematic story arc, and just an awesome battle scene is effective, but also the theme that it draws out in terms of, you know, organized, mechanized military being defeated by valor and honor and bravery. I think that, you know, people who are critical of Tolkien's binary, rosy view of, oh, good will always triumph, are forgetting that this guy starts writing this mythology while he's in the trenches of World War I. It's not as didactic to say that Sauron is Hitler and the English are the Gondorians or whatever. The enemy in Tolkien's world is that. It's technology, it's warfare, it's industry. The destruction of innocence, the destruction of nature, and the destruction of men leading their armies into battle as opposed to a general who's never seen and just directs his troops from way back is really well illustrated in the Two Towers. I think it's a brilliant film. My favorite is probably The Fellowship of the Ring. What Brian was just talking about, what that makes me think of is the first hour of Fellowship of the Ring is literally like turning the pages of Tolkien's first book. It is really well done. Instead of trying to tell a new story from the elements and synthesizing from what Tolkien did, which is what's taking place in The Hobbit, they are really just walking you through the wonder of reading that book for the first time, and they're playing it out on the screen for you. And I think The Fellowship of the Ring is a film that achieves that really well. And also, I think the onstage chemistry and the relationship between Sean Bean and Viggo Mortensen is just great. I mean, I think I almost cried at the scene where Boromir is dying. It was very effective. I think they did a great job.
You think it was a smart move to omit Tom Bombadil in that whole part?
Good question. You know, a lot of people are pissed that they omitted Tom Bombadil. I think it's a question of you already got a 3.5 hour fucking movie, and what are you going to have a 5 hour movie and introduce Tom Bombadil? And the Tom Bombadil, the cool thing about Tolkien's books is that he hijacks the narrative to geek out on this thing,
Tom Bombadil. You know, Tom Bombadil goes on forever in the book. And then by the time you get to the end of Tom Bombadil, it's like you're waking up from a dream and you go back to the story. And then they leave and Tom Bombadil just sort of disappears. But, you know, that's what's great about reading Tolkien's books. He writes on and on. You read The Silmarillion, you're like, this is 1,000 pages. Yeah. This guy is not – he's no obligation to the plot or the story, and that's great. But to sit through that in the theater, I don't think could do that. I think if you threw Tom, and like I think a lot of people, you know, how do you do justice to Tom Bombadil on the screen and do that in a time frame that a movie audience can digest? So I think that was a good decision.
So I think it's interesting that of the four of us, two of you think that the new Hobbit movies have the best Lord of the Rings.
Right, yeah.
I think that's interesting because it speaks to the quality of work that Peter Jackson's putting out in terms of replicating, recreating. I mean, been created before or something. Creating a world people want to keep going back to.
Nobody saw the Lord of the Rings coming, you know, and even when it came out, people were like, who did this film? Peter Jackson. Who the fuck is Peter Jackson? Oh, don't you remember Meet the Feebles? And you're like, holy shit, he went from Meet the Feebles? Or the movie about the people who are really insects from the rainforest. Was that Peter Jackson?
Peter Jackson did Frighteners, and he did...
Sorry, that's not... But it's Peter Jackson-esque in that it's a really bad movie with fantastical elements that's gross and violent. Uh-huh. How he got to... Lord of the Rings is like, oh, wow, that's a step up.
And he did, Dead Alive. It was like a zombie flick. And at the end of the movie, there's the protagonist. He has a lawnmower and he attacks all the zombies with the lawnmower.
Dead or Alive, too. That was based on a video game, too, which was
Dead Alive.
Dead Alive. Yeah, it was based on a video game. It was like Time Splitters.
Dead or Alive was
No, I know Dead or Alive, but Live was based on a video game. You had guns in front of you in the arcade, and you're shooting these zombies that were throwing things at you or trying to scratch you. And then you like move on to the next level, then you went into the house. The level began like outside, like in the graveyard.
Unlike every other zombie video game.
Exactly. You know, it begins.
Now, is this one of those arcade games where you actually had a gun?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's what I'm saying. Okay. You had a gun in the arcade. You're going through the forest or the graveyard, and you're shooting all these zombies. If you passed the level, then you went into the haunted house, and if you got into the haunted house, and they just kept going on. So, yeah.
Just kept going.
Dead Alive, not Dead or Alive. Dead or Alive is a fighting game, which I think they did do a movie on, which I didn't even bother watching. It's terrible, horrible. But Dead Alive is based on an arcade game in actual where you put your quarters in, and it was kind of like Operation Wolf, where you had your
Operation Wolf.
You had your I want to say Operation Wolf because you had a gun like mounted on the screen, but Operation Wolf was a side scrolling opposed to Dead Alive. It was more like Time Splitters where you had things actually coming at you.
Okay.
Where you had to like shoot.
Time Killers?
No, Time Splitters.
Time Splitters? Yeah. Was there a Time Killers, right?
I don't know.
Giant
don't
insect
yes
creatures
no.
with chainsaw arms.
No, but there is a Time Cop.
Okay.
Starring Jean.
Are you talking about the Van Damme movie?
And there's a Time to Kill.
There is. Samuel Jackson and Sandra Bullock, right? Sandra Bullock.
I hope they burn in hell. Yeah. Wow. The Time to Kill.
Yeah, wow.
That's a good movie.
No, that was a really good movie.
Yeah, I'm glad they're dead. Sorry.
But Time Cop, wasn't that Van Damme? Wasn't that Van Damme?
Yeah, that was Van Damme.
Wow. I don't know what to make of that movie. That was like...
It was about as good as Universal Soldier.
You know what, though? I liked the concept of Universal Soldier. Now, the movie, like, totally, like, super sick.
Good concept, poor delivery.
Yeah, no, the concept was really cool, just because, you know...
Van Damme peaked in Kickboxer. You know, you can't fight him. He was kicking the wall. I mean, kicking the wall. It's breaking.
Yeah, no. And you know, what was it? The other one where he had the twin, you know, the twin brothers. Oh, that one was terrible.
Are you talking about Double Dragon?
No, not that one. No. No, that Double Dragon was taken from the arcade game.
Yeah, Double Dragon.
I forgot what it was called.
You know, I was really disappointed when I saw Double Dragon.
You take a brilliant story like Double Dragon and you make that shit out of it. It's like what Peter Jackson's did to Dead Alive.
Yeah, no, definitely. So Dead Alive was, you know, like I said, I didn't bother I did watch a little bit of it and I turned it right off cuz I was just like,
all
right. Movies that are based on arcade games, not video games. There's a difference between arcade games and video games.
Okay.
When you base a movie on an arcade game, it's, you know, it's just going to be straight crap. It's just going to be like, you know, like the used toilet in the corner of that like dive
bar. Is there no good examples of a video game made into a good movie?
Yes.
There's got to be something.
There has, yes.
Oh,
yes.
No, there's not. I'm sorry. Every video game made into a movie is a shitty movie. I'm sorry. Mario Brothers is actually one of the better ones. I mean, because John Leguizamo is in it, and at least he's somewhat appealing. But no, I think maybe they could make a good movie out of a video game, but they haven't done it yet.
Dennis Hopper as Bowser is fucking phenomenal.
he brings it home. Yeah, no, you're right. Dennis Hopper, of course Dennis Hopper is Bowser. Giant fire-breathing turtle dragon. I think Dennis Hopper is who should play that.
Okay, that was sort of the beginning of the end for Dennis.
Putting like big, like, you know, cinematic movies aside, when it comes to webisodes or viral, you know, movies, you know, but I guess the best classification for them would be a webisode is when it started out when they did this. This movie, you could call it a movie, is called Halo Landfall. You find that on YouTube. That was really well done. It was so well done, you're like wondering why they can't make a Halo movie.
I don't know if it's a movie or a TV show, but Halo Nightfall.
That's going to be a TV show. After Landfall, they started doing these little snippets, these little clips for advertisement of the different Halo games. And pretty soon Netflix basically, they put on, not the first, but what they did when they got Halo Forward Unto Dawn, which is a great, great movie. It was a webisode originally. You only found it on YouTube. It was a five-part little mini-series that they put out once a month. And then what they did, it was so popular, people demanded that they just made it into one, like they just merged it all, you know, it was no separation, no to be continued. They just merged it into one big movie kind of thing. And you can find it on Netflix, but they just finally put it on DVD. And Forward Unto Dawn is pretty well done for a Halo movie because Master Chief is in it, but because they show the cadets of, you know, the troopers, the UNSC troopers to the ODST troopers, which is, you know, totally different classifications in the UNSC military. And I'm sorry, hey, I know Kyle is not.
I just watched Forward Unto Dawn.
What did you think?
I hated it.
Why?
What's cool? Because it's not what's cool about Halo. It's seeing a bunch of fucking people that I don't care about who are cadets. The fun part, the cool part about Halo, and what makes that game awesome, is that I'm a cyborg badass shooting intelligent aliens, and they're talking shit to me. And I'm killing them anyway. I'm hunting them down. That's what's cool about Halo.
They took the spotlight off of Master Chief.
Why? That's the coolest part. Okay, that's good. That's like it, don't. It's like they took the spotlight off Batman and focused on Dave the Secretary, and that was good.
If you look into the Halo universe, though, there's only one Master Chief, which is cool. And I have to say, though, I will argue till the day I die, though, the best Halo game that was made, because you have Halo, Halo 2, Halo 3. Halo 4, between 3 and 4, you had ODST, then you had 3 and 4, and then you had the one with all the Spartans, which was Halo Reach. I thought Reach was the best Halo video game there was. Halo was, and then Halo Reach. The reason why I thought Halo Reach was second best was because 2, 3, 4, and ODST should have been a freaking DLC expansion pack. No, it was an expansion pack that they stamped the price tag on, and you still bought it because it had the word Halo on it. Which you played this ODST troopers, which are the orbital shock drop troopers, which was cool, but it kind of sucked. It was just, I thought it was like poorly done. They just rushed it too quick just to make a quick buck. But when it came to Reach, it was cool because, you know, you got to play another group of Spartans. And when I played Reach, it made me feel like I was playing Halo again. The first feel. Remember the last episode I said, you know, close your eyes and think about when you saw Star Wars again for the third time. When I first played Reach, I was like, yes. It was like playing Halo again for the third fucking time. It made me feel like this is what Halo is supposed to be. A lot of people didn't like it, which I don't understand why they didn't like it. You were still these badass.
See, don't remember the first two times that you played Halo or saw Star Wars. You weren't impressed. You had to watch it a few times. Ah, it's actually pretty good.
When 4 went into Dawn, when they got to expand the Halo universe, and they actually got into more than just the Spartan, but the humans that were, you know, the front lines of this war against the Covenant. Sure, I can understand why. Who gives a, you know, flying hell about?
I think. Okay. Here. Okay. This is my observation of this whole point counterpoint going on here.
Oh, sweet. It was
a natural point counterpoint. It was a naturally occurring one. We didn't have to set the debate up at all. Those are the best. But what I wanted to bring, what I wanted to mention is, why would they have put out Forward Unto Dawn? Like you're saying, yeah, it's about the troops in the front lines, blah, blah, blah. It's about the academy guys. But why would they have done that and never have put any kind of movie out about Master Chief yet?
Because Master Chief, if you look...
Like, okay, No. Wait, you've been talking for a while here. I was asking you about Peter Jackson, and then you started talking about Halo.
Okay, the reason why they didn't focus on Master Chief, because in a way, he's kind of a mystery. They just know him as John Spartan.
I don't need to see his origin story. It's like Kyle said, I want to see him killing people.
Yeah, what's cool about Halo is the fact that Master Chief has no personality. He don't see his face. He reveals nothing. He's glib. He's a man of few words. He just goes in there and kills shit because he's a soldier. He's a force. He's a machine. He's actually a robot. So when you humanize it and you go to kids, oh, I'm scared. Gotta join the cadet because I'm from South Carolina and I'm a soap opera actress and I got into this shitty sci-fi movie that people are only going to watch on Netflix. And you totally fucked it up. That's what's cool about Halo is the absence of personality in the hero is what drives the success of that franchise.
I think that they just expanded the Halo universe on another level.
Sure, no, and that's great for video game fans. However, what if you don't play Halo?
Wait, who doesn't play Halo?
Exactly.
All right, fine, whatever.
If you're not playing Halo, then you're just...
Some girls I dated, I'm sure, but then, aside from that.
So we can all agree that Peter Jackson did a good job with Lord of the Rings.
Peter Jackson, because they were talking of a Halo movie, and apparently Peter Jackson was behind the project, but I think that's where I went off, so I'm just justifying my
goal. I need justification.
We tied it all together.
It all comes back around into a big dovetail loop.
The Master Chief, the entire time, most people don't know this, was actually Peter Jackson.
He lost a lot of weight to fit in the
He did. Yeah.
I thought that.
All right, Master Chief, Peter Jackson.
Oh, wow.
Look, Peter Jackson and Master Chief are a part of all of us, and we are all a part of them.
Wow. Okay, wow.
We're all big little Kevin Bacon inside.
Okay, let's talk about something serious here. All right. This is enough of this Halo talk. Okay. Right. African American Captain America. Yeah, reactions? What do we think about this? What reactions? Steve?
I uncharacteristically like this. I usually don't like these kind of gimmicks.
Okay.
I really like this.
I like that he's
keeping the wings. I like this a lot. It's cool. I don't know.
So you didn't like when they decided to kill Wolverine?
Well, they're not replacing him with
some other dude with claws.
I love the fact that they've done a black Captain America, and the reason is that I think we're seeing these appropriate or politically crafted expressions of racism all over the country right now. And having a black Captain America is a way to really piss off a bunch of racist people, but not in a way that they can actually complain about because they'll look like a total asshole. Right. And so I think it's a good statement to be like, yeah, you know, yes, we can have a black president, we can have a black Captain America. Suck it.
And I think it's a smart story move. It seems like Rick Remender has been doing it. Yeah, absolutely. He's been doing a great job on Cap. I am excited to see Cap's best friend essentially become Captain America and try to fill Cap, try to fill Cap's shoes. I think it's their whole relationship has always been well constructed and well maintained throughout comic book history. They certainly had the whole. Their friendships always, but they, you know, when it was Falcon and Falcon and Captain America books back in the, you know, 60s, late 60s, 70s, that was a big deal at the time. I mean, we had Captain America, a white, blonde-haired, blue-eyed.
Yeah, fucking looks as Aryan.
Exactly. Befriending, you know, some dude that looked like he's from Harlem. And it worked. It was a great story. And I think it had a lot of meaning towards the civil rights movement in general.
Yeah, no, I'm way more for this than Thor becoming a female. And not because I think there should be more female, you know, strong female superheroes and stuff like that. It's fine. But this strikes me as sort of like a, this strikes me as a gimmick.
Oh, the Thor female thing?
Thor changing Thor into a female. I understand the desire for stronger female characters, but...
Right.
But that's, yeah. I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know if the Enchantress just casts a spell on him and he changes gender or what. But
yeah, I think that, if they're changing his gender, I think that really, Thor is so masculine. I mean, it really is. I mean, he's like, you know, he literally takes mugs and smashes them on the ground. And, you know, he's like sort of the epitome of manliness. So to like change him into a woman, it kind of it brings up a lot of gender issues and it brings up a lot of questions about how we view our own sexuality.
I think that the cool thing about Thor as a comic book is it really is respectful to the mythology. I mean, this is a religion, or was a long, long time ago. And the themes in Thor as a comic book in the films really are true to that mythology. To make Thor a woman, you kind of just piss all over the mythology. It strikes me as dishonest. I think that diversity is great. And comic books have made a lot of strides recently. I think the Black Captain America is thematically very appropriate. I think a female Thor is almost kind of like doing having a comic book where Jesus shoots lightning out of his fingers. It's kind of disrespectful.
Really like Jesus Christ Superstar.
That was really...
Me too.
Yeah.
But only because of Andrew Lloyd Webber's indelible writing.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And... in the shed, that's always a welcome development. Yeah. But yeah, I guess we could all agree that we're in... Well, Camacho, I have a statement about...
What do you think about Sam Wilson becoming Captain America?
I think it's cool. I like the move. I'm not familiar why he became Captain America. I assume that Captain America... Oh, that's right. You guys were telling me that he got the super serum extracted from him. And he aged, so they needed to replace him. I think it's a smart move. I'm glad that I got to see the Winter Soldier. Again, I'm more of a DC than Marvel, but when it comes to comics on the screen, I will watch it. And so...
Well, that's an interesting point you bring up.
And I'm glad that I was able to watch the Winter Soldier when it came out back in April. Matter of fact, that's when I did it on my birthday. I had a 5-hour split. I went to the Broadway Cinema and watched the 3D version at the 12:20 showing because I had a 5-hour split. That's why I watched it by myself on my birthday. I thought it was really cool.
I went to the 1:30 showing.
And the reason why I liked it was, I mean, you know, we all know why we liked the Winter Soldier, but the fact that I did not know anything about the relation between Falcon and Captain America. So when this news is just brought to me today of what they were doing, I was like, wow, that's cool. And that photo, you know, that drawing of him with his wings still, yeah. I mean, that makes a pretty big statement. And and because I was able to warm up with Falcon. I knew who Falcon was, but I wasn't really familiar with Falcon until I really, you know, watched the movie, which is kind of sad because there are probably listeners right now like, you freaking idiot, how come, you know, you should read the comic more.
I'm sure there are.
For me, not knowing much about the character and then watching the movie, I got to know more about the character, you know, Falcon's character. And
okay, well, I think it's...
I'm very happy that Falcon took over the Captain America name / uniform / shield and to show off his wings as well. That's pretty cool.
All right. Well, I think it's interesting that we have all these brand new Marvel movies coming out starring Chris Evans as Captain America. Well, meanwhile, in the book, they're totally changing it around to Sam Wilson being Captain America. So you have a very different Captain America that's going to be running in the books, whilst we have Chris Evans starring as Captain America in the movies.
The Winter Soldier, the sequel to the very first, they skipped from Cap's origin story all the way to Winter Soldier, because that was
right. Well, because it takes Avengers is sort of like the direct sequel to Captain America, right, okay, if you think about it.
But then Winter Soldier is really the only other like long arc Cap story that you can even think of.
Right.
Right.
So I don't think they're going to be. They're not. Obviously, they're not going to do any of this in the movies. They're not going
to. That's what I'm getting at. No other Cap stories to tell on their own. You can't draw from the comics to get any good Cap stories. Winter Soldier's already been done.
Yeah.
So they might actually, in like Cap 3 after Ultron.
Okay.
I wouldn't be surprised if
maybe
if Wilson takes.
Yeah. It makes me wonder how long they're going to carry this on in the book. They're going to bring. They've got to bring Steve Rogers back eventually.
You know that's going to happen. You know that's going to happen, and then writers have a choice between whether they want to write a Sam Wilson Cap story or whether they want to write a Steve Rogers Cap.
Which you know makes me wonder if they're going to take Falcon and change his character after he's not Captain America anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Like some kind of U.S. agent kind of thing. Or
just back to Falcon, I guess.
Yeah, who knows? Oh, you're Falcon again.
In the comic book, you know, with his white, you know, costume and his little kind of like headgear slash mask thing, you know, that he wore. Yeah. But when they did their own rendition in the movie, I thought it was really well done because he didn't have that. Because to tell you the truth, I didn't like his costume in the comic. Yeah. But what they did in Winter Soldier, that was pretty cool. It kept it up to date, kept it a little bit more masculine, opposed to him wearing a white leotard with this open chest thing.
Oh, that 70s look? Yeah, that was awesome. That was funny. He should have had an afro, too. And like a little necklace. But on that note, we're just about out of time for this week's Shed Talk. I know it's been exciting and riveting and everything. However, we need to talk about what we're grateful for here in the Shed. Steve, you go first tonight. What are you grateful for?
I'm thankful for indoor plumbing.
That's a good thing to be grateful for, right? It certainly made taking shits easier.
Exactly. We underestimate here in the West how good we have it. I would take half as many shits if I had to shit in a hole in the ground.
That's compelling.
You know, we could still have indoor plumbing, but have it outside, detached from the house.
That would be pretty cool. As long as the outhouse had pipes and shit, it wasn't just
That would be pretty cool.
Okay. Camacho, what do you think before?
Can I say what grinds my gears instead of what?
No. We don't end shed. So we don't end shed. I know somehow you managed, last week you managed to call someone a C-U-N-T during when we were trying to be grateful, but okay, I'll let it go.
What we're grateful for. I am really grateful for.
You have a grind, you do it earlier. We always end on a positive note.
Yeah, no, and I'll probably grind my gear next week. But right now, I am really grateful for. NCBD, New Comic Book Day, which is tomorrow on Wednesday. I'm really, I have my Kindle every Wednesday morning. I wake up at 7 o'clock and hit on my Comixology app to see what came out. And I am just thrilled about New Comic Book Day. That's what, and not only thrilled, but I'm really grateful for New Comic Book Day. Kind of like what when moviegoers, you know, they wait for that Tuesday new on DVD. Well, on Wednesday, us comic book readers get to look forward to New Comic Book Day. So that's what I'm grateful for. But I am looking forward to Grayson number 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Grayson number 1 was great. It was awesome. And so I am looking forward to Grayson number 2. And if it comes out tomorrow, my socks are going to be so wet.
Okay. Me, personally, I am grateful for automobile mechanics. I went and got my oil changed today at this place called Premier Oil. It's down in Eureka. And you just drive right in. And these guys, and you don't even leave your car. Like, you just drive. They offer you a variety of drinks. You know, I got the water. You drive over, like, this little, there's like a little work pit, you know. And then they slide the door open and they're all, like, changing your oil and stuff. And they're asking you all kinds, trying to sell you all kinds of stuff. You know, here, you want this for you to clean out your, you know. Clean out your glass lines. You want this to, you know, improve your engine life. You want this to, what kind of oil do you want? Well, you know, I ended up spending $120 by the time I was done.
Wow.
But my car is a lot, you know, more thankful for it. And it was, anyway, I'm just grateful for people that have the skills that have attained the mechanical skills to maintain my vehicle. And I thank you. Kyle?
I am grateful for Netflix account that I have, because
it makes being bored go by a little faster. You know, the fact that I watched that Halo movie from beginning to end suggests that I'm grateful that Netflix populates its selection with all kinds of interesting stuff. Love it or hate it, I'm very grateful that it's there.
Well, all right. It's been kind of a love-hate episode of Shed Talk. And until next time, it's been good.
Leaves are falling all around. Time I was on my way. I'm much obliged for such a pleasant stay. But now it's time for me to go. The autumn moonlight's my way. But now I smell the rain, and with it pain, and it's heading my way. Sometimes I grow so tired. Come to be gone. And though I held, we drank a thousand times, it's time to ramble on.
So, what seems to be the problem?
I'm depressed. Life seems harsh and cruel. I feel alone in a threatening world where what lies ahead is vague and uncertain.
Ah, yes. Well, the treatment is simple. Shed Talk broadcasts weekly, and there is a new episode tonight. You should tune in and listen to it. I'm sure it will pick you right up.
Shed Talk? But, Doctor, you don't understand.
I am Shed Talk!
I'm not a fan of Superman.
You're setting the bar pretty low.
Right. With that grind of views,
the way I always thought comics were cool.
That doesn't make any fucking sense.
I don't know.
I want to see that guy in space.
Exactly. There's nothing like, God, this is pretty good, but if he was in space.
I'm in the shed. I gotta be honest.
You have strong opinions about shit you don't know dick about.
Shed Talk is a podcast dedicated to bringing you the best from the past and present of comics, video games, movies, and all things pop culture. You can find Shed Talk on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or directly at shedtalk.podomatic.com.